It is great to worship with all of you this morning. Last week we talked about New Year's resolutions. We talked about the idea of a fresh start and transformation. And if you were with us, then you would recall that identity was a big piece of that. The idea that we can change from the outside in is misleading and foolish. No, true transformation comes from the inside and pushes out. But we also joked about how New Year's resolutions are things that can be kind of frustrating, and they often don't last. Case in point, statistically, and I like statistics, I like to look at them, this Sunday, and I want to just congratulate all of you who are here, but the first Sunday of the year is statistically the lowest church turnout just around the country. So it must mean that attending church is not on the top of everyone's New Year's resolution list, and if it was, they missed it before they began. But again, it's great to worship together this morning, and we're beginning a new series, and it's a series that's really important to me. It's one that I have just been thrilled to dig into. Imagine with me that you're digging in your backyard, the frost has settled, warmer days are upon us, and you're in your garden, and you see a big rock that you're trying to move around, you get it off to the side, and underneath, you see something interesting. You begin to dig a little bit more, to the point where you feel like you need to get out the shovel, or maybe for some of you, you call the grandkids over to get out the shovel. And as you begin to dig, you realize that it looks like this might be some type of a bone, some type of a fossil, but it's bigger than a little mouse or a mole or a cat. And as you begin to dig it up, you realize that it's some type of dinosaur bone. It's some type of fossil that looks like it's significant. And if this seems weird, I found out it's really not as weird as we might think. Or is out of place. A couple years ago, we went to the Children's Zoo in Indianapolis. And if you haven't been, especially if you have kids, I think it's kind of fun if you don't have kids with you. Maybe more fun without the kids. I don't know. But we went downstairs to the basement. And in the basement, there was a cool play area. There was some dinosaur stuff. But what I didn't realize is there was this big glassed-in area where they were actually excavating and curating and getting ready dinosaur bones that were found in people's backyards. Some of them in southern Indiana. I thought you had to live out in Montana or North Dakota to see things like that, but it could happen anywhere. Now, the first reaction I think many of us would have if we found this thing that looked like it was rare and valuable, as we get excited. This might maybe meet the gap in the retirement fund. This might pay for the kids to go to college. Be fun to have our name on a plaque that, you know, we found this extraordinary thing. I think the reason that movies like National Treasure and Indiana Jones do so well. In fact, over Christmas, I saw a clip of both on TV. And National Treasure came on while we were in Chicago in the hotel room. And I don't know what it was about it. I was like, no, we can't go out and do all the things that we were here to do until I watch a little bit more. There's something intriguing about the mystery and about finding something hidden of immense value. Built in all of us is a little bit of that treasure seeker. There's something amazing about revealing something valuable that was covered over before. And I think part of that desire comes from something that God has given us intrinsically. And it's the understanding of this that I think is going to be so very important and foundational for us to do all of the things that we feel like we ought to. For us to be obedient to the gospel. See, if we are honest, we don't live like others are made in God's image. And this week, of all weeks, God hit that with an exclamation point for me. As I was preparing this message and I was meditating upon it, what does it mean to be made in the image of God? I had a homeless man come into my office and he made a mess. There was mud all over our floor. He used the restroom and one of my associates had to go and check on him after about 45 minutes. And what he did to the bathroom wasn't real exciting. The man was clearly mentally not well. There was some schizophrenia and I started to get frustrated because we had things to do. We're a business too. And as I began to get frustrated with this man, God, I guess, made it click in my head. The exclamation point I'm talking about is he said, Jeff, he's made in my image too. And it took me back. I wish that that had come while he was still in the building. He had since gone, and we weren't mean to him. We didn't take any dignity away from him, even though there was some gross left behind. But it changed my frustration. It chipped it away. It melted it away. Because I am very aware of the idea of being made in God's image. Theologically, I understand what it means to be made in God's image. But I'm going to tell you, if I'm struggling to live that out, my guess is some of you are too. When we're at the grocery store, when we're dealing with a frustrating neighbor or a barking dog, when we're in traffic, when we're at work, when somebody does something we don't like, when we are irritated or frustrated, do we see the image of God in everyone we encounter? Because that's what the scriptures teach us. We're going to dig into that in a few moments, but make no mistake. The image of God is being bore out. It is upon your best friend, your pastor, those you go to church with, but it is also upon those you hate, those who are different from us, those who frustrate us. And that's hard to reconcile. See, if we can't live out, or we can't live out what we don't believe, and we can't believe what we don't understand. And so this morning we're going to dig deep into what it means to be made in the image of God. The word we use in churches or in the theological world is imago Dei, and it's a beautiful word. But if I use that and begin with that, some of you would say, what about Joe DiMaggio? It's foreign to many of our ears, but the Imago Dei is this concept, this truth, that when God made us, He made us in His image. And we can't treat others like they're made in God's image if we don't treat ourselves like we are made in God's image. And we can't treat ourselves as though we are made in God's image if we don't believe it. And we can't believe it until we understand it. And so we're going to take the next quite a few weeks. This is probably going to be an 8-week series where we dig and we look at what it means to be made in the image of God and how that plays out. Because if we can't do that, if we can't truly see others the way God sees them made in His image, then the rest of the gospel sort of falls apart practically. See, we can pretend that someone was made in God's image, and we can say that we believe that, but if it's not inside of us, if it's not intrinsic, then all we're doing is patronizing them, feeling that we are somehow a little above or a little below. So I'm excited. There's a lot of work I've been putting into this, and I'm excited to share it with you over those next 8 or so weeks. But this morning we're going to dig deep into the source, the first scripture that we see with the image of God. Genesis chapter 1, verse 26 through 31. Then God said, "Let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground." For some of you, maybe it hits a little weird to the ear to hear the plural of God saying, "Let us make mankind in our image," but it's important, even at Christmas time, that we remember that Jesus didn't just come into existence the moment he was born into that manger, that Jesus pre-existed that time, that he left heaven at God's right hand, and the Holy Spirit is not some mystical force, but a person of the Trinity. Again, all of them are God, yet they are somehow distinct, and that is this paradox and mystery we wrestle with. But my favorite illustration of that comes from the book Flatland that I had to read in geometry. Who knew geometry could be theology? But the protagonist in the book, he draws a picture of himself to this 2D world that has come alive on the page, and they say, "Is this you?" And he says, "Well, yeah, it looks like me to you, but it's two-dimensional and I'm three-dimensional." And they're like, "We don't know what that means," because they're flat shapes on a page. And for us, I think the idea of a being, of a God that is all-powerful, omnipresent, that is all-loving, all-knowing, being outside of time, is hard for our minds that are kind of fixed in this world to understand. But God in His fullness, Jesus and the Holy Spirit and the Godhead, at the moment of creation, they say, "Let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness." So God created mankind in His own image. In the image of God, He created them male and female. He created them. God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it, rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground." Then God said, "I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth and every tree that has fruit with seed on it. They will be yours for food. And to all the beasts of the earth, and to all the birds that are in the sky, and all the creatures that move along the ground, everything that has the breath of life in it, I give every green plant for food." And it was so. God saw that all He had made, and it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning on the sixth day. The first thing I want to draw our attention to this morning is the idea that we have a sacred identity in the image of God. God filled us with dignity, creativity, reason, and authority. When He made us, He didn't just say it was good. He said that it was very good. So what does it mean to be made in the image of God? I think at its basic, if we're going to take the 10,000-foot view and get started with the idea, the word for image here is a lot like the understanding that we have in office machines when we talk about imaging. We don't call them copiers anymore. We call it imaging equipment because it reproduces the image that you put in. Well, that understanding is a lot like the understanding of the word here. God has reproduced His image, His likeness in us. It doesn't mean that we look physically like God, the God who we can't see. Doesn't mean that we all look like Jesus or that we should look like the white Jesus we see in the movies. This is one of the oldest pictures of Jesus that we have, but it's still about 500 years after Jesus' life. A lot of the ones that come before this, there are about five other depictions of Jesus that we have from an archaeological standpoint, but most of them look kind of like stick figures. They're not real detailed. So this one probably already began to have a European influence on it, but it sure doesn't look like the Dutch white Jesus that we see in the movies today. So we are made in the image and likeness of Jesus, but it doesn't mean that when we are made in the image of God, we look exactly like God physically. If so, I'd be a little skinnier. I'd probably have six-pack of abs. You know, that's not what we mean here. It means that we are created with some of the capacity, and that is different from the rest of creation. God did not create the animals that fly in the air, that swim in the sea, or that walk on the ground in His image aside from us. And He didn't make the angels in His image. Hierarchy, I don't think God wanted us to get too much into hierarchy when it comes to angels. But there are scriptures that say we were made a little lower than the angels, but those usually refer to the level of power that we have. And angels have some cool abilities when we see people interact with them. But the scriptures also say that we will be judging or set as judges over angels. And angels have no path of redemption. And angels were not made in the image and likeness of God. Angels were made as servants to God. We were made as fellowship, as friends of the Most High God, in His image with the ability to reason, the ability to understand morality, the ability to think and to think about how we can think, creative capacity. And I understand, and I'm not trying to pick on the studies that are done, but you have to understand a lot of the studies that are done to try and show that a chimpanzee can do art. The motivation behind the study isn't just to say, can a chimpanzee paint a circle on a piece of paper? It's getting back to the capacity is, do they have the ability to create and to reason? Do they have this thing that's intrinsic and different from us? And we live at a time when we talk about intelligence in the digital world and artificial intelligence. But we're a long way away from a computer being able to really reason. It's fascinating. We won't get into all the details about what the neural nets and matrix of how it kind of compiles data. And they can do a very convincing job. You could be talking to a computer in the near future, maybe even today, and think it's a real person on the other end. Think it's someone who's created in the image and likeness of God, but we're still a far way from it being creative in the exact same way that we are. We were given stewardship and dominion and authority over this world. That's a special thing. But what I want us to get back to is this idea of dignity. That when God made us, He said, "It is good. We are good." And as we're going to look at in a few minutes, even after the fall, that image remains in us. Why do I think we're at a time when this needs to be understood more than any? Because we're at a time when people are doing self-harm more than ever on recorded history. Every year this number goes up as people choose to take themselves out of this world for all the pain, for whatever reason. Often it boils down to this idea of identity and self-worth. And we have to understand that we are not valuable because of the things that we have done. We are not valuable because of what we have. We have intrinsic value because God made us with intrinsic value. See, you and I, but maybe even more so for us, those that we encounter and walk by on a daily basis, they have no less value than that Tyrannosaurus Rex skull we may someday dig up in the backyard. We are all walking around as these beautiful, valuable treasures. And I don't think we believe that. We may be able to say, okay, Pastor Jeff, I get it, I understand. But God made us to resemble Him. He gave us so much intrinsic value that we have this sacred identity, and so does everyone else we encounter. Life is beautiful. And I understand we have quite a few billion on this planet, but each and every one of those souls is not only precious to God, but is made in His image with tremendous capacity, tremendous ability. So God made us in His image to have that identity, to know that value, to know that worth. And I want you to understand that this is not a common message. And in the religious world, it's especially not a common message. This is a revolutionary truth. And at the time that it was shared, all the way back when God shared the story of creation with His people, this was profound. When God shares the story of creation, He transforms the idea of religion. Because before this, there were many stories of creation. And Christianity sometimes gets picked on a little bit because they'll say, well, the creation narrative, the story in Genesis 1, that's just God copying what other ancient Near Eastern myths were. And there is maybe a grain of truth to that. You see, there were many ancient Near Eastern, Mesopotamian, Egyptian, Canaanite stories of creation. And many of them, in some ways, use the same language as the story that God uses, but you have to understand that each and every story that came before were so very different. They use the same imagery. Sometimes they evoke the same language. So there's this idea of struggle. There's this idea of chaos or of God speaking into the void. And there's sometimes the idea of days that are given. The first day, the second day, the third day of creation. But what God speaks into His story is so revolutionary and different that I think it deserves a little bit of comparison. So in the Epic of Gilgamesh, this is Mesopotamia, or Enu Elish. These are their two creation stories or epics that were out there. We see that humans were created. Lots of similar structure in language, but in here very clearly. First of all, the God who creates, He has to earn it. He has to win a great battle, where our God just speaks. He's already at power. But humans are created for one purpose in the Mesopotamian myths. They're created to be labor for the gods, a form of slave labor. They have no value. They are just subservient things. If you saw the Thor Love and Thunder movie, I think that they kind of paint that picture in an interesting way. There's all of these Greek gods and tribal gods that are together, but the idea is kind of flipped, that all of these servants that have devotion, the gods didn't deserve it. Because they were cruel and they were mean and they were uncaring. And all they did was create these little human slaves. That's not what God says in His story of creation. In the Egyptian, there's a number of different stories that they share. But the one thing they have in common is that the Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, was created alone in the divine image of Horus or of their God. And it is the justification that he has for his divine right to rule. And their creation story, all the rest of us were created to be slaves. In the Canaanite myths, They make a God that seems very, very human and weak, even more weak and subject to temptation, but man. But again, it seems here like God was made in man's image, not man in God's image. And again, they are created to be servants or slaves to the gods that were there. It wasn't uncommon. Many of the myths, and there are many that we can pick from, they say, well, God made men in his image, but he made women to be something else. Many of them are pretexts for racism and nationalism, where they say God made our people to be good, but that evil God over there, he's the one who made my enemies. And he made them to be bad, to be less than. See, we can get, and we do in church, we get wrapped up in the scientific idea of the creation narrative. We argue, was it a literal 7 days, or were those 7 days longer? What does this mean? And churches get crazy about it. We argue more about how we got here and how we're leaving than almost anything else in theology. But for a moment, I want us to put a different hat on and realize that God is speaking to a people who have no scientific method, who live in the world of myth and mythology. And he is saying, you have heard the story of creation over and over in the world you live in. I'm going to borrow some of that language so you understand, but I want you to see how different my story is. I created all of you, those you like, those you don't like. I created all of you, those who look like you and those who don't look like you. I created all of you, whether you are male or whether you are female. I created all of you in my image and in my likeness, and that means you have immense value. There is no one who is less than. And we're gonna think about this in other ways. We're going to look at it from other angles. But we look at the differences between us in class, in wealth, in possessions, maybe in IQ, in a way that we've determined how to measure it. And we see these differences as being so big and so far apart. But we have to understand from God's perspective, those differences are so small compared to how different we are from him. I remember when I was a kid and I was kind of learning how to share the salvation message. One of the methods, and I liked Michael Jordan as a kid, they said, you know, can any of you jump and have as much airtime as Michael Jordan? And of course not. I don't even think LeBron James can do that. Okay, well, if Michael Jordan, if it was a jumping contest, and it was about who could jump the highest, Michael Jordan might be able to jump the highest and the longest, especially if there was a basketball hoop involved. And we get excited. We say, ooh, isn't that great? But what if we learn that the standard for salvation wasn't to dunk a basketball, it was to touch the moon? Well, then isn't it kind of silly that he can jump like 2 feet higher than I can, maybe more? When the standard is the moon? And I think we forget that. That's why forgiveness gets so hard. That's why we tend to look down on those who have less than us or act different than us or more sinful than us. Because somehow we think we're doing so much better when the standard of perfection is as far away as the moon. We've just learned to value these little differences so much. And again, it doesn't mean that God doesn't love us. I'm not trying to have you look down on yourself because the scriptures are clear. We are made in God's image. The value is there, but we see these differences and we use them to justify why I may be better than someone else, or someone else may be better than I am. When the playing ground is a lot more level than we think. Watch the lost interview of Steve Jobs a few years back. One of the things that stuck out to me, and many entrepreneurs will share the same rhetoric or story, but he said the key to his success was the moment that he realized that people are just people. That no one is better than anyone else. So if anyone else is capable of greatness, so am I. And so are they. I think God is speaking to us this morning that we are capable of great and fantastic things because we can think in a way that reflects and is in the image of God. We can reason, we can love, we have dominion that's been granted to us, we have the ability to create. We have so much made in the image and likeness of God, and that gives us tremendous ability in this world and opportunity, but so does everyone else in the room. So does everyone else on every other team you're with. We are all made together. And this is, again, revolutionary because few religions, especially if you leave the Abrahamic religions that share this common core of creation, believe that we are all made together in God's image. Then finally this morning, a diamond in the rough. See, after the fall, God's image in us was defaced, but not destroyed. This is a line I'm borrowing from the theologian John Piper. There's a big question here. What happens in the fall? Did the fall or didn't the fall destroy the image of God in us? Well, the scriptures are clear that while the image of God in us was defaced, it was graffitied, it may have been covered over with some dirt, it was not destroyed. Genesis 9:6, God's speaking to Noah, and he says, "Whoever sheds human blood, by humans shall their blood be shed. For in the image of God has God made mankind." Later in the book of James, the author of the book of James says, James, we believe the brother of Jesus, he says that with the mouth we praise God in heaven, but then we go and use it to curse our brother who was made in the image of God. See, this image of God thing, it doesn't go away because sin entered the world. And the amount of sin that we experience or has been thrust upon us at points. Some people have lived a life just filled with sin, and it wasn't even all their own actions. It may have been the abuse and sin of others mixed in with their own sin that has weighed them down. And it is again like that fossil or stone buried under the ground. It is so valuable, but it is waiting to be uncovered. That as you walk around, and maybe you are the diamond in the rough, and you've come into the right place this morning, and you don't feel very valuable, and you don't feel very loved. You feel like there is graffiti all over whatever image of Jesus or of God could be in you. You are intrinsically valuable, and that doesn't change. That fossil was priceless while it was in the ground and under the dirt. And it was priceless when it was brought in to the basement at the Children's Museum in Indianapolis and meticulously cleaned off. It was priceless either way. And how can something be more priceless and less priceless? It is just priceless. There is no way to compare it because it is unique. And you are priceless that way. Whether you're still in the mire and the dirt, or you have been cleaned off and put on display. But that is also true for that person who ticked you off this week. It is true of the homeless man who defiled my bathroom. It's true of the person who gossiped about you on social media. It's true about the person who cut you off in traffic. And that's a big deal right now because it's icy out. could have caused an accident. It's true about that brother, sister, aunt, or uncle who you haven't talked to in a long time. It's true about that coworker you can't stand. They may have some dirt and some graffiti over the image of God, but they are bearers of God's image just like you. Many of you know our story. Beth and I have been through a lot as a family this year. And there are some people that many in the world would say, you have every reason to hate that doctor. And I'm having to look in the mirror and say, oh man, you want me to pray for these people? But it's not a bridge too far. Those who have persecuted us, those who have hurt us, those who have abused us and mistreated us, they are made in the image of God too. But they may be covered in dirt and graffiti. That image may need to be uncovered in them. But they're no less valuable. Because again, neither of us can jump to the moon. If you really believed that we all bear the image of God, what would change? We're going to get more specific in the weeks to come. Maybe attendance will really drop because it's going to get a little challenging. But if we can understand this, if we can live in the grace of being image bearers of God and allow God to make us reflect Him more, to look more and more like Him, then what would it be like to live in a world where everyone we encounter was incredibly capable? That they were incredibly capable and incredibly valuable. What kind of community could that be? No one is worthless. No one is less than. I can only imagine. And I believe when we see that, we see the church and we see a glimpse of heaven. But what would it look like today? What would have to change today? If you really believed that all of us, not just those in this room, heaven would be kind of sad if it was just us, but if those outside these walls, if everyone you encountered this week, if we really believe they were made in the image of God, what in us would have to change?